The Institute of Contemporary Art at the University of Pennsylvania currently is exhibiting a retrospective of the work of painter Neil Welliver. These paintings from 1966 through 1980 are landscapes of Maine, the woods, ponds, hills, lakes, and mountains during the different seasons. Welliver has been referred to as a neo-impressionist because of his use of visible and rhythmic brushstrokes and his interest in the play of light. Welliver is the co-chair of the art department at the University of Pennsylvania. He divides his time between Maine, where he lives, and Philadelphia, where he teaches. He grew up in rural Millville, Pennsylvania, and the Institute of Contemporary Art, if you'd like to see his show, is at Walnut and 34th Streets. Neil Welliver, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you.
Was it hard for you to find the subject matter that you wanted to paint, or did you kind of know it was going to be landscapes?
No, I think the subject matter of any painter is in some way rooted in his childhood. I had a rural childhood and spent a lot of time in the woods. I grew up near Williamsport, Pennsylvania. That country has been totally changed by expressways from the city now, and so that which I remembered as a child was no longer there, and that's how I finally went to Maine, really, to try to recapture the openness and unpeopled countryside.
I wonder if you think it's very different to paint nature than it is to, say, paint houses or still lives. You can't manipulate it, really. You can change your angle.
No, painting is painting. It's really all the same. You certainly can take remove the branch from a tree in a painting much easier than you can remove the leg from a person, right? So there is really a kind of flexibility.
Well, one kind of, I guess, corny but popular sentiment is that art can't come close to the beauty already created by nature. How do you feel about sentiments like that? Since you're out in nature a lot. Painting it and interpreting it.
I think people see nature through art. The idea that people go out and suddenly have a fresh and totally uncluttered and undirected view of nature is absolute nonsense. They normally see it through the way they've been taught to see it, i.e. through art.
You do some portraits within the settings.
There are some figure studies and portraits in the painting. I think it hasn't been recognized at least in the press that I've heard about the show that those were done basically 15 or 16 years ago, and I've really been concentrating on the forest for a long time.
Why did you leave the figure?
I really can't give you a substantial answer for that. The figures in the case of my pictures were always a part of the environment, very strong part of it. I feel very strongly that man is part of the environment and not separate from it. And suddenly I was not very interested in the figure, and I was really painting the environment and not the figures.
Is it hard for you when you go through a period of transition where you're going to stop doing the figure? I mean, does that happen slowly?
It doesn't happen that way.
Uh-huh.
You don't decide anything in painting. It happens as you paint. Painting is not a process in which one makes intellectual decisions and then acts on them. The decisions are made as a part of the painting process.
You studied with Joseph Albers.
I studied with Joseph Albers, right.
And his painting, I mean, I know he was a color theorist, I guess you could
right.
say. And in that sense, I could see a connection with you since you use color in a very strong way in your painting, but his paintings are so unlike yours. His paintings are like mm-hmm. squares within larger squares,
right.
and the colors contrasting in it. And yours is interpretations of nature. They're very rhythmic.
Right.
What did he teach color principles? What was it like to study?
No,
with
he did
him?
Not teach color principles. As a matter of fact, Joseph Albers is for me was the greatest teacher of this century in the fine arts, right? People talk of Hans Hofmann and, of course, Klee and Kandinsky taught, but Albers was, for me, the great one, and I was fortunate to study with him. Albers was, on the bottom line, a poet, like we all are, want to be. And he was also German and didact, right? Just was born and reared that way, and he did a great deal of explaining and talking about what he did. In retrospect, I think now a lot of that explaining and talking was wrong, dead wrong and incorrect. I think he misused scientific terms. I think he misunderstood scientific concepts. But he had a marvelous eye, and when he was speaking in very, very simple terms, he could he could tell what a color was doing and what it would do in a different context. And the whole Albers thesis is that a color is only what it is because of where it is at that moment. And he loves to make red look like green and green look like red and make the colors act and interact in certain ways. And I also think, by the way, that he's an absolutely sensational painter. And I love his painting. I love to look at them.
What do you love about his paintings?
That they're such complete organisms. You know, you go and there are three or four squares and one inside of another. And if you take the time to look, which very few people do when they see three or four squares, suddenly they will move and pulse like a heartbeat and they become deep and shallow and vibrate. And they're marvelous. They're really like living organisms. Simple organisms.
He had really pared down the elements of painting to very basic form and color. Was he doing that kind of work when you studied with him?
Yes. And
was it kind of against his principles to do something like landscape painting?
No, it wasn't. When I was studying with Joseph Albers, I was a student, of course, and painting abstract pictures. And he liked my painting and also disagreed with many things I did. And when I left the school at Yale, I taught with him for a number of years, you know, for him. He attacked my work very, very strongly because I was in painting female figure and he didn't think that was appropriate. He saw a sort of logical progression in painting and thought that it was really had become abstract and was going to go on continue being abstract and would develop. But in fact, by that time, abstract forms were pretty well wrung out, right? But the idea that someone would again try to do something inordinately complex and so on was not part of his scenario.
You've been called a neo-impressionist. Do you feel very influenced by?
Well, you know, one's called so many things. Yeah. One's called so many things. Neo-impressionist. I'm a realist, but I'm also not a realist, and so on. What's the line in that funny book of Terry Southern's, The Magic Christian? Call me anything you like, but don't call me late for chow. Have you ever heard that?
No, I haven't.
You ever reading it there? So being called a neo-impressionist doesn't mean much to me, really. I'm not involved in neo-impressionism. They were involved in very systematic study of light. That's only a part of what I'm interested in.
Your paintings strike me as being very rhythmic. Is that conscious on your part? Are you interested in the rhythm of brushstrokes?
Not the rhythm of brushstrokes so much, but really certain actions occur in nature, right? And things occur at certain intervals and so on. And that interests me a great deal, and I spend a lot of time observing it.
This is probably the kind of question only a non-painter would ask, but when you're painting, you're like 2 inches, 3 inches away from the canvas, or a foot maybe. And your paintings are the kind of paintings where, for me as a viewer, I really wanted to stand at different distances because it kind of changes
right.
at different
mm-hmm.
distances. Really, how do you know how it will look and what effect you're achieving from those other distances?
There's a thing called parallel vision. And let me give you a very brief description of it. If I look at you and I don't focus, I look at your left ear with my right eye and your right ear with my left eye. I'm sort of staring. You know, people do that when they're impolite on occasion. If you do that all day, and I do that all day, by the way, when I'm painting, visual elements take on the appearance that they would have if you were viewing them from about 8 or 10 feet when you're viewing them really at painting distance, which is a couple of feet, or 15 feet even. And sometimes, literally at the end of the day, I have a difficult time focusing again because I really paint almost all day with that unfocused thing. I do on occasion, of course, focus, right? Stop, sit down, move back, but only a few times a day. Normally, I'm directly on top of the painting, and it's done with that parallel vision.
Hmm.
Don't do it at a cocktail party because people will think you're looking right through them, as they say.
Do you think it's important to be able to move around the painting and see it from those different distances?
Absolutely. Absolutely. When you go, you can always tell a painter in a gallery or in a museum because they're always up with their nose in the painting and looking at it from a few feet and 10 feet and 20 feet and so on. Yes, I love the idea that people go up and look directly at my pictures and then move back and look at them from a distance.
Do you imagine your pictures in certain settings when they're
never
done, like in galleries or homes?
Never. Never.
Do you follow them up and see where, like,
never,
if someone buys it, what kind of
No, I'll tell you something interesting. It'll probably spoil the rest of your questions, in fact.
But we'll just end the show early. Don't forget
right.
it.
I have virtually no interest in my work when it's finished. I don't follow it. I'm a very poor careerist. I have very bad records. There was a great deal of difficulty getting this show together, in fact, because from a fire a few years ago, my records were burned, and I was careless anyway. Painting for me is a way of developing oneself, finding oneself, if you will. I don't mean that in the psychiatric sense, right? But trying to complete oneself. It's really a tool for the person to develop, to edify themselves, as they used to say. And the painting is residual. Paintings for me are really like tracks in the snow, and they're behind me. It's not my nature to look at my tracks behind me, but rather try to see where I'm going. So when a painting's finished, in effect, I'm really finished with it. Now, they have economic value. I recognize that, right? They mean something economically. But the objects themselves, I have no paintings hanging in my house. Not one of my pictures hanging in my house at all.
You don't think you'd like to see it?
Well, my studio's connected with my house, and if I have paintings in the house, I'm so compulsive that the minute a painting's hanging there, I'm working on it, right? And when I'm in the house, I prefer to spend time with my children.
I am surprised that you don't go back and look at your work, because even in terms of it being edifying, I mean, if you look back over a whole body of work, you can see that much more about yourself, I'd imagine, or understand that much more about the times you've been through.
Myself is here now at this moment, right? And whatever was in the past is contained in me now, right? And to go back and review my history as a painter by looking at pictures is, to me, not a very interesting way to spend my time. I'm very interested, as we sit here, in a painting that I just left that I'm working on in Maine. I'm very interested. And I just thought about it a moment ago while we were talking.
Right? What was it like being at the Institute of Contemporary Art, where you're surrounded by your very large canvases?
I thought they were terrific.
Were you surprised?
Yeah. I was surprised, really, at the incredible change that's taken place over a period of, 15, 16 years. The early paintings are less assured, and I don't dislike them for that. The figure paintings of a good many years ago, obviously, I see a good deal more now and have more command of what I'm doing, but they interested me. And when one does not make an intellectual decision to change, right, but rather changes, evolves, you're not aware of the changes so much. And suddenly walk into a room and see 16 years, the residue of 16 years of your life, is kind of an interesting experience.
You don't feel changed by it in any way?
No.
Do you get anxious to finish with the painting when you start?
Never. It never crosses my mind that I wish this painting were finished. And see, it's so difficult to tell anyone, because most people do jobs and suddenly want them finished.
You want to see how it's going to look when it's done, right?
No.
I mean, you don't, but that's...
Yes, I understand what you're saying.
People are in a hurry.
Yes,
I think they want to see the totality and... So mm-hmm. anxious to see what it'll look like.
You see, the totality for me is my adult life as a painter. And there's the residue of 16 years of it is over there. The painting I'm doing now is just another part of my life passing, right?
You know, a lot of musicians don't spend much time listening to music because they spend so much time making it and listening
right.
to what they're making. And since your subject matter is nature, do you ever want to get away from that so that you're not thinking in compositional terms, since you're always...
Well, I'll tell you a very interesting thing. There are two places in the world I absolutely love. One is Maine, and the forest, where I spend a great deal of time, even when I'm not painting, just rambling through the woods, smelling, looking. And the other place is New York City.
What about New York?
Well, you know, Rudy Burkhardt said a marvelous thing to me one time. We were walking in Maine, and he's very laconic, and he said, "You know, Neil, Maine is exactly like New York City." And I said, "Oh, very interesting. How's that, Rudy?" And he said, "Well, in Maine, when you walk in the woods, there's always something different. And in New York, when you walk in the streets, there's always something different."
Can't argue that.
Yeah. So I love New York. I love the people. I like all the things that people don't like about New York. I like the noise. I like the people. I like the culture. I love it.
And the people I'm sorry.
I love Maine because they both have very, very high style, you know, the country and, I mean, the real country and the city.
I think the people who don't like New York say that you like it only because you're not there enough to hate it.
Oh, no. I spend a lot of time there. I spend all the time I can. You know, whenever it's convenient and I'm not working, I want to go somewhere, I go to New York.
Could you see yourself painting New York landscapes, urban landscapes?
No. No, I couldn't because I'm not rooted in that. Right? I see Philip Perlstein's New York landscapes. I think they're terrific. Jane Freilicher's. I think they're marvelous, right? I'm not rooted in it.
Can I ask you what you think of Richard Estes' work?
I like it. I like it very much. Yeah. I think he's a really accomplished artist.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No. There has been a kind of new realism, and there have been shows about the new realist. Has that kind of new realism boom been affecting the way your work is viewed or the interest of galleries or buyers
in your work? Yes, I'm considered, it has been written, you know, numerous times that I'm one of the sort of prototypes of that movement, you know, myself and Alex Katz and Philip Perlstein, the people that are in their early 50s and so on. And there's another whole generation that comes along. Sure. That affects the way my work's received, and very positively.
Is that a label that you're comfortable with?
No. It's not a label I'm comfortable with. I do not, frankly, feel a part of the realist movement, you know.
I wonder if anybody does.
I don't know. That may be the nicest thing about it, is that it's so broad and so inclusive. You know, Frank Goodyear did the realist show here and got some bad press for it, you know. I thought that was one of the most marvelous shows done in this country in years and years and years because it was so broad and it showed the incredible range of sense data painting.
In addition to your work as a painter, and I should remind our listeners that my guest is Neil Welliver, you're also the co-chair of the art department at Penn. And with being the chairman of any department comes not only the teaching duties but the administrative responsibilities, which... Mm-hmm. I would think for you as a painter might be very, very trying or tedious. How do you handle that aspect of your work?
Well, there's a woman named Mary Beth Phillips and a woman named Lisa Allen, both of whom are absolutely incredible managers. And they work there in that department. And they manage a great many of the things that some chairmen have to do for me. And since I trust him implicitly, I don't have to worry about that. My feeling is that in a graduate department of that kind, one of the most important things is the selection of people who are going to deal with the students. And I see that as a primary function. And anyway, schools are over-administered. Everyone knows that. I mean, there are thousands of meetings that people are requested to go to behind which executive decisions are made. So we just don't do that. It's pretty straightforward.
Do your students or their interests surprise you?
I don't understand the question. I don't recognize the question. Does what?
Do your students or their interests or their interest in painting and art surprise you? The kind of work they're turning out.
No, it's on a very high level and it doesn't surprise me. I think it's delightful.
I mean, the interest even in the style or the conceptual interest that they bring to their painting.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm not surprised by it. I anticipate it. I mean, I expect it.
You said before that for you, painting isn't an intellectual experience. There isn't that sense of planning and deciding what you'll be interested in. So that probably preempts this question, but do you think you'll ever exhaust the subject of Maine forest, or can you see yourself painting that for many more years?
No, let me first correct what you said.
Sure,
I think maybe I didn't make myself clear. There is a very, very large intellectual part to painting, right? What I'm saying is that the decision-making is also locked into the making, right? It's not separate and free of it. Secondly, no, every time I walk in the forest in Maine, I find something that I've never seen. In places that I've walked through 100 times, suddenly it appears absolutely differently. I see something absolutely... I can't imagine living that long.
Well, I will continue to enjoy your work, and I want to thank you very much for talking with us this afternoon.